Hi, everybody. My name's Chris. I'm an alcoholic. Tonight's presentation was to be done by Cassie V from Stanhope. Unfortunately, she had a conflict and was not able to make it. So, and then I asked somebody else if they would do it, and they weren't able to get the message in time. So I'll do it. Tonight, the topic is literature-based sponsorship. And I can talk a little bit from my own experience, and I can talk a little bit about this group and why this group was started. Basically, this group was started to provide information to people, information and experience to people, so that they might be able to use a literature-based sponsorship style a little bit more effectively. When I was getting sober in North Jersey back in 1989, what we had, for want of a better word, what I call it is I call it an oral tradition type of sponsorship technique that was going on back then. And that's basically all that there was around that I remember, at least. And what that consists of is it consists of sponsors passing down wisdom information and fellowship and sometimes even program suggestions to one another. In other words, how many times have you heard something like this? Well, my sponsor told me I'm to do it like this, and that's, you know, you gotta give it away the way you got it. And that's basically an oral tradition type of sponsorship method. Now, that's okay if you have a good sponsor, if there was a good sponsor in that lineage somewhere or other. The problem is you can get all kinds of wacky people coming up with wacky ideas about how to stay sober. And I was one of the lucky ones. I got a pretty good sponsor in the early days. He didn't know anything about literature-based recovery, but he knew enough to get me active and involved. And it came a point in time where he did ask me to do a four-step, which really resulted in me beginning to start to recover. But he understood enough about AA to know that it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to stay sober. It takes a lot of work to recover. And although he really didn't have me on a good path to recover, he had me on a path that for at least a period of time was going to result in my continued sobriety. Now, what I've learned over the years is if you're truly an alcoholic. Now, I'm assuming you're truly an alcoholic. A large amount of people that come into AA today are not what this book would describe as an alcoholic. I don't think it's our place to judge what type of an alcoholic somebody is unless they're working with us. Then we really need to know. But if you're the type of alcoholic that they qualify in this book as hopeless, you're not going to be able to stay sober by just not drinking and going to meetings one day at a time. That's not going to work for you. You're going to drink. And the statistics on people that just try to not drink one day at a time is terrible. If you go down to Plainfield, where the holder of the statistics for our North Jersey area, and you ask them what would be the statistics on somebody coming into AA and then somebody being there 5 years later, and it's abysmally low. It's somewhere around 3% maybe. And that might be too high. So the people that come in and try to not drink one day at a time aren't able to do it. They aren't able to just do fellowship and have it be a vital enough experience for them to continue to keep coming to AA and continuing to stay sober, especially if they're what this book is is describing as a real alcoholic. Now, I want to read one quote here, if I can find it. Yeah, here it is. This is from a nice little pamphlet that Bill wrote called Problems Other Than Alcohol. This is copyrighted 1958, but he wrote it to try to give some answers to some really hard questions. But in it is this great saying, sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. I like that statement, the teaching and practice of the 12 steps. There's a great quote in As Bill Sees It, which is basically it says that the most important part of sponsorship is an adequate presentation of the program of recovery. And the program of recovery is the material that's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. So as a sponsor, your most important job is to get somebody through this work so that they can have a spiritual awakening, because it's the spiritual awakening that's the treatment for alcoholism. It's not drinking. Not drinking is good. I think it's more than good. I think we all certainly need to start there. But again, you take a look at the statistics for how many people just decide to stop drinking and how many people are still not drinking 5 years later, you're going to find a very, very small statistic. The statistic in this book for the people that came into AA and really tried the program of recovery in this book back in the early days was anywhere from 50 to 93% of the people that tried this remained sober, at least until the point of the publishing of the book. So I think it's incumbent upon us as people trying to carry the message to let people know that you want to increase your chances of recovering from alcohol. You want to increase your chances of not picking that stuff up and putting it back in your body and having it rip holes through your life and everybody else that's around you. You want to increase those chances? Then don't just go to meetings and not drink one day at a time. Go to meetings. Don't drink, work the steps with a sponsor, and live life one day at a time. And if you do that, you'll find that automatically your life is heading toward a direction of service, where you're going to be finding ways to give back what has been so freely given to you. And then your recovery will take on all kinds of more dimensions. Once you start sponsoring, and once you start taking people through the book, once you start working with institutions, I could go on and on and on about the 12-step work that's available. Anyway, one of the things that happened to me personally was somewhere around 1991, a friend of mine handed me a set of tapes, and they were a big book, a set of big book workshop tapes, and up until that point in time, I hadn't paid very much attention to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. As a matter of fact, the only thing I did was I got it signed by all my buddies in rehab, and it had crazy things in it like, Chris, you're a maniac, you're never going to make it, you're Buddy Wild Man, you know what I mean? And I put it up on the shelf, and I never opened it up. But I'm what's called in this book a real alcoholic, and here's what was happening to me. My alcoholism was progressing while I was not drinking. That's what happens with alcoholism. It's a progressive illness. It progresses when you don't drink as well as when you do drink. Sometimes it progresses quicker when you're not drinking, believe it or not. And what I mean by that is anybody that's gone back out after a period of sobriety understands that you're drinking more than you were before. Okay, that's part of the progression. But another part of the progression is the spiritual malady. The part where emotionally we're more in trouble as each day goes by. And I think that that's the reason why a lot of people can't quit drinking one day at a time. Because emotionally and spiritually, the alcoholism illness is progressing, and it just gets, sobriety just gets unbearable. Whether you, you know, sometimes you can stave it off by going to tons and tons of meetings. Sometimes you can stave it off with a serious, serious desire to not drink, you know. But what happens in alcoholics of the big book variety is emotionally and spiritually they start to deteriorate. And it gets to a point where sometimes we even become suicidal. We're restless, irritable, discontent. We're filled with resentment. We have self-centered fear. We go into black depressions, all kinds of things. And these are symptoms of untreated alcoholism. So what do we do sometimes? Sometimes we rush to doctors with these ailments, not understanding that it's untreated alcoholism. Now, sometimes it's not untreated alcoholism. Sometimes it's clinical. But more often than not with alcoholics, it's situational and it's alcoholism. It's untreated alcoholism. Now, I was getting to the point when I had about between 14 and 16 or 18 months, where I was going to 13 meetings a week. I was driving people from rehabs. I was a secretary at this group. I became a GSR at that group. I was going out to the diner after the meeting with people. I was hanging out with them. I was going to sober dances. I was Mr. A frickin' A, okay? I was doing everything that you could do to get A pluses in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. People were asking me to lead meetings and pat me on the head and telling me I'm a great example of AA. And you know what? I was dying inside. I was dying inside. Every day that went by, I was emotionally worse. And back in 1990 and 91, act as if was one of the fellowship suggestions. Oh, if you feel really terrible, just act as if you don't. Well, that's terrific. You know, if you have like a board meeting or something where, you know, you can't really talk about your issues. But to just act as if you're not in trouble day after day after day is not very good. It's not a good idea. Well, I get this set of tapes. And the set of tapes outline a program of action in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And the ultimate message of this was, it basically said, Chris, you know, you're a fellowship dude, but you have no program. You have no AA program. You do not have a program. If you aren't following the suggestions and the instructions in this book, you don't have an AA program. You've got something. You know, you've got Chris's way, you know, as Chris sees it, but you don't have an AA program. Now, this information, I wasn't real pleased to receive this information. I really thought I was doing pretty good, and you know, nobody wants a cold slap in the face like that. That you don't even have a program after working so hard with all the fellowship stuff. So I kind of resented the tapes, as would probably a lot of people, and I put them off on the shelf. But I'll tell you what: once you hear the truth about your alcoholism, it says in another part in this book, we hope we have disturbed you about your alcoholism. Because if we've disturbed you, it's going to cause you to think about it. It's going to cause you to maybe dwell on something that you need to dwell on. It may be something that you must awaken to for your own survival. And that's basically what happened to me. I became awakened to the fact that there was a program that I really was not a part of. Neither was my sponsor, neither was anybody I was hanging out with at that time. I was in the Baskin Ridge group, and we had a big book meeting once a month, and whatever leader there was got to choose anything from that book, and they always chose stories, you know, hard luck kid, I was a loser. And this was what we would do in the big book meeting. We would read these stories and identify, not compare. That's another good one, identify, don't compare. Don't judge, but stick with the winners. You know. Anyway, there was a lot of fellowship stuff that was really of no use at all to me because I was a real alcoholic. It's probably of use to some people. Some of these wonderful slogans, keep it simple. None of those slogans ever worked for me. I couldn't keep anything simple. I would have complicated a one-car funeral. So keeping it simple was something that was out of the question. But anyway, here I am, emotionally and spiritually dying in the rooms of AA with 13 meetings a week under my belt. And I pull out the big book and I start going through the work. Now, anybody just doing it out of the book without a sponsor is obviously going to be doing a pretty poor job of it. And I did. I did a pretty poor job of it. There was things that I skipped. There was things that I didn't understand. There were directions that I misunderstood, you know. But I did enough of it. I did enough of it to really start to generate a spiritual awakening. And the spiritual awakening is basically your attitude and outlook on life changes. You end up being able to think and be things that you weren't able to do, think, or be before. Your perception on life and reality and relationships and everything tends to change. And hopefully you become more and more comfortable in your own skin. And hopefully the emotional and spiritual unease that you're suffering from starts to dissipate, and you start to feel good, and you start to understand serenity, and you start to have little God shots. You know, while you're driving down a road, you get incredibly grateful for being you right where you are. And little things like that that are an incredible, incredible thing for an alcoholic to experience. So it was significant that I started to go through this book, but what was even more significant is by this time I always gave good share in the closed-minded discussion meetings. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you give me a topic and I've probably shared on it 40 or 50 times before, so I've got the cute little things that can make everybody laugh and I'll give good share. So I had a lot of sponsees at this time, you know, and some of them even survived. Some of them even are still alive. But some of them were drinking at that period of time. And I realized, kind of intuitively that they also needed what was in this book. They were the type of alcoholics who relapsed a lot. So they're probably, in the chapter to wives, they give, types 1, 2, 3, and 4, heavy drinkers / alcoholics. They were probably types 3 and 4 like myself. So they needed what was in here because they were coming to meetings. They were doing what I was telling them to do. They were writing gratitude lists, you know, and all that crap. And they were drinking. They continue to drink. So more significant even than me going through this, I started to take sponsees through this work in my house. And what happened was it started out just sponsees, but once these individuals were going through the steps, and their lives were changing. They were wakening up to the world. They were excited about it. You get in that evangelical stage, you know, where you want to beat everybody over the head with the book Alcoholics Anonymous and tell them they're doing it wrong. They started to tell their friends about it. So they started going, "Hey, Chris, can I bring over Harry?" You know. And it ended up starting to be a meeting at our house. I think this was 1994 or so, 1995, by the time it really got going. And there's a number of people that have gone through the steps over at my house that are still around. They're still card-carrying AA members in good standing. Their relapse level is very, very small. It is not 3%. Of them stay sober. It's more like 90% of them stay sober that went through the work with me at my house. Now, I don't take any credit for that because it's not my message. It's the message in this book. Anyway, the topic tonight is literature-based sponsorship. Literature-based sponsorship is something that can really benefit any type of sponsor technique. Now, there's a number of different jobs that a sponsor has. Sometimes we're friends. Sometimes we're mentors. Sometimes we're mothers or fathers. I mean, sometimes we're you know, we're just a support. We just support people through tough times by just being there and caring. But specifically, what tonight is on is the literature aspect, the literature-based aspect of sponsorship. And I want to talk a little bit about that. I'm not going to expect anybody to follow me through the book because I'm going to be jumping around way too much. I want to go to the foreword to the first edition. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we recovered is the main purpose of this book. Precisely how we recovered is in squiggly font. And squiggly font is a designation of pay attention. Important concept. So the book Alcoholics Anonymous is the main purpose of the book. Among others, some of the others were making money and, there was some other reasons, but the main purpose was to outline a program of action whereby an alcoholic could recover, recovered. Just to qualify that so no one freaks out. The difference between being cured of an illness and recovered from an illness. This is the difference. If you're cured from an illness, that means the illness itself has been removed. It's gone. And you can be cured from a lot of things. If you have smallpox or something and, you know, you get the shot or something, you're cured. It's never going to come back again. You're cured. It's gone. If you're recovered from an illness, the symptoms of the illness are removed. The illness isn't removed. The symptoms are removed. So many of the symptoms of alcoholism, one of the most devastating symptoms of alcoholism is obviously drinking. That's a symptom of alcoholism. But there are other more subtle symptoms, some of the ones that I talked about earlier, the emotional and mental and spiritual torture that we go through as alcoholics. Sometimes even before we drink. The acute stages of alcoholism where we're destroying lives right and left, where we are the tornado roaring through everyone's life, feeling like we're being misunderstood and it's their fault. These are symptoms of alcoholism. Those symptoms can be removed. They can be removed if we practice a program of recovery and we maintain our spiritual condition one day at a time. Not we don't drink one day at a time. We maintain our spiritual condition one day at a time. All right, I'm going to assume for a minute. I'm going to go to page 20 here. This is in the chapter, There is a Solution. It says here, you may already have asked yourself why it is that you became so ill from drinking. Doubtless you're curious to discover how and why in the face of expert opinion to the contrary that we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. But if you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? You know, that's what I did when I came into AA. I don't know that I wandered around to everybody and I said, what do I have to do to get over it? But I was coming to AA for an answer. I was coming to AA for some help. So I wanted to know what I needed to do to get over it. It says here, it is the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we have done. So I've kind of done some historical work on Alcoholics Anonymous. For a period of time, about 5 or 6 years ago, I was heavy into studying the history of AA. And that led me into Oxford group studies. I've done some extensive Oxford group studies, and that's really where AA came from. AA is Oxford group principles. The recovery program is from the Oxford group. But anyway, some of the things that they were doing back then led people with obsessive compulsive disorders, people who were just down and out, a lot of people who just just weren't satisfied with life. A lot of people got involved in the Oxford Group, and they followed some of the principles in the Oxford Group, and they were, quote, reborn. They had a new attitude and a new outlook on life. And drunks started stumbling into the Oxford Group. Basically, Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were in Oxford Group meetings before they had even met each other in two parts of the country. And Dr. Bob was going, but he was sitting in the back, and he wasn't participating. You know, he was like the Alkanauts that we see every once in a while. They orbit the program, and every once in a while they come in for a landing, and you see him in a seat, but you never see him involved. That's what Dr. Bob was doing in the Oxford Group. Bill Wilson, though, is a mad dog. You put him anywhere, and he wants to take over. When he was put in the Oxford Group, he wanted to witness, and he wanted to drag new people in. He wanted to evangelize, and he got real busy. Well, getting real busy kept him sober, and sitting in the back and coming late and leaving early didn't work for Dr. Bob. But when they both hooked up and Bill told Bob what he was doing and why he was doing it, Dr. Bob started doing what Bill was doing, and he sobered up. So this is a little bit of the history. They refined in the early years. They refined what was really good for the alcoholic and what they could leave out. There was a lot of the Oxford Group program that didn't really pertain, like getting up on a soapbox in front of a crowd of people on Times Square and proclaiming your faith in Jesus. Bill thought that they could probably pass on that one, on the soapbox. But they kept a lot of the personal spiritual exercises that would bring about the spiritual renewal of the individual. And this is what has been handed down to us into this book. And it works. It really does. There's over 200 groups out there for obsessive compulsive disorders that borrow, either with or without permission, Alcoholics Anonymous's 12 steps, because they really aren't AA's 12 steps. Bill Wilson said that they're not ours. They're spiritual steps. They're humanities. You know, they're God-given. But there's Overeaters, there's Gamblers Anonymous, there's Food Addicts Anonymous, there's Tower Snipers Anonymous, every kind of disorder in the world is out there. And they all recover by working the 12 steps. So the 12 steps are very, very powerful, not just for alcoholics, but for anybody, you know, that's a little bit tweaked. All right, let's assume for a minute that you've had a sponsor decent enough to take you through the steps, and you've gotten yourself a spiritual experience. Now you're itching to give it away because you're in that evangelical mode, you know, where you're sharing at meetings and you're annoying the old timers and you've really got it going on now. What are you going to do? The chapter Working with Others is a great chapter, and I'm going to jump there right now. Now, my first impression of the chapter Working with Others was, this is my impression, oh my God, if you tried to do this, you'd scare them all away. If you get hardcore on these people like this, if you push up on them like this, you're going to drive them away. Well, they didn't care if they drove them away. They weren't about encouraging somebody not to drink. And when I came into the North Jersey AA meetings, there was a lot of encouragement to not drink. Yay, yay, we don't drink today. That's really what was going on. The difference between encouraging somebody not to drink and offering them a program of recovery whereby they will achieve freedom from alcoholism is like the difference between night and day. It's a huge difference. All I was able to do before I had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps was to encourage people not to drink with me. And I'd get them to ride in my car with me. You know, that's all I knew. That's all I had. That's all I could give away. But once I had gone through this work, I had something more to give as a sponsor and as a person working with other people. And now I could give it as imperfectly as I did in the early days. And you know, today I still don't claim anywhere near expert level ability at transmitting this message. I think that we all have different problems in our lives that don't resolve right away. Some of them that take years and years and years. So we're not always a glowing example of big book sobriety. However, we can give an adequate presentation of the recovery program if we've been through the work already. And I believe that really is our job. So let's say you've kind of found somebody. All right. On page 94, it says, outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you did a four-step. This is on your first visit with a person. This is the first time you see somebody. This is what you're supposed to do. You're to outline the program of action, explaining how you did a four-step, how you straightened out your past, how you went out and made amends, how you made direct amends to people, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It's important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. So explain a little bit about the 12-step. Otherwise, he's going to be waiting for the pinch at the end, you know? I know that there weren't people lining up to do a lot of free stuff for me when I was getting sober. You know what I mean? Make it plain that he's under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he's not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You know, I was so about convincing somebody that they're an alcoholic. They may not have even been, but you know, you're an alcoholic and you got to come to meetings and you got to go to the meetings that I go to and you got to get in the car. You know, I was about dragging people in here. Doesn't say anything about dragging somebody to an AA meeting. It's basically saying, sit down with them with this book. Find out what's going on. See if they're willing to go through a program of recovery. Now, a lot of people, when I say something like this, will say, wow, you know, if you would have done that to me when I was brand new, I probably wouldn't have stayed. Well, you know, like I say, we're not on a membership drive here. You know, we don't get toasters for signing people up. This is a 12-step program. That's what it is. It's Alcoholics Anonymous is a 12-step program. That's what AA is. It says in this book, if you're not willing to work the 12 steps, that's fine. That's great. Go work something somewhere else. You know what I mean? Go try whatever you want to try. And we want to be helpful to you. We want to be helpful to you. But under no circumstances did they allow people to come to the meetings who weren't working the steps in the early days. They showed you the door and very, very politely they gave you their phone numbers and they said, when you want to start working the steps, you know, come back and see us. And, you know, when I've given big book presentations and I've said things like that, people have said, well, I needed to come in for 2 or 3 years and just share. You know, it took me 2 or 3 years to even be able to open up the big book. Well, you have to look at what kind of sponsorship you had at that period of time. And you also have to look at how many meetings you must have taken hostage with issues and drama that might well have been avoided if you had a literature-based sponsor. You know what I'm saying? There are a lot of meetings that are just so issue-oriented and so drama-oriented that they probably shouldn't even be called AA meetings because there's very little recovery message in them. Every once in a while, someone might mention a step or so, but we're about recovery. Again, you know, there's different meetings for different people, and I hate to knock certain meetings, but I have to tell you, my life was threatened by going to some certain meetings when I first got sober because there just wasn't at all a message, and I very well could have died because I happen to be what's known in here as a type 3 or a type 4 alcoholic, and I just heard no message. And I was dying inside, and if it wasn't for this set of tapes, I wouldn't have been able to survive the abysmal North Jersey AA. I wouldn't have made it much longer. There just wasn't enough solution available to me. And again, I can't put the blame all on AA. A lot of times it's the receiver and not the transmitter. A lot of times the message is being transmitted. Have you ever worked with a sponsee and you've told them 400 times something and they go to a meeting and they hear somebody else say it and they come running back to you and they go, "You wouldn't believe what I heard the other day. I heard that, you know, blah, blah, blah." And you're like, "I've only been trying to tell you that for a year and you got to hear it from Harvey the plumber," you know? So a lot of times it's the receiver that's not receiving and it's not the transmitter. But I do have to tell you, I went to some just God awful meetings around this area when I first came around, and it's very, very lucky that I'm alive. Anyway, you shouldn't be offended if he wants to call it off. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. So it's to the good if you've disturbed him. Maybe you will send them back out. You know, maybe you will send them back out because it's just too serious of a deal. But when they come back in, they might just be willing at that point in time to do what needs to be done for recovery. Again, I do not believe that treatment for alcoholism is not drinking. That probably creates a lot less acute, active, insane behavior in one's life, but your condition, your inner condition is not treated by just not drinking. You get even worse because you've been sedating your emotional nature for 20 years. All of a sudden you take the bottle away. Now you have no sedation method for this emotional nature. It's like going, "I just want to kill people," you know? And that's what an untreated alcoholic is like. So pulling away somebody's book. Again, I think it's preferable for somebody to come in when they're willing to work a program of recovery. Is it okay for people to come in who don't want to open any books, don't want to take any steps, don't want any service commitments, and just want to hang out in meetings? Yeah, we're not about. I'm certainly with the tradition of membership here. I'm never about telling somebody that they don't rate a chair in here. But for people that I work with, I don't work with anybody that's not willing to work the steps. My experience is the people who walk on the steps are going to relapse anyway, so I'm wasting my time. And if they don't have to work the steps and they stay sober and relatively happy, they're not an alcoholic of my type. They're a type 1 or maybe a type 2 who, with sufficient desire, sufficient reason, can give up or moderate drinking entirely, you know, or give it up entirely or moderate drinking. They're not like me. So I don't need to be working with them. They can go somewhere else. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program. Pay the money back? I don't think so, pal. Well, in a case like that, I'm not going to immediately demand that the person be willing to make all of his amends right off the get-go. None of us are willing to do that. The steps change us into the type of person who can do amends. We can't do amends when we're brand new. But I'll ask questions like this. I'll say, "Well, wouldn't you like to be the type of person who could do that?" You know, and they'll usually say yes. So he may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. You know, they told me never to admit to anything, even if they got you on video. You know, well, again, wouldn't you like to be the type of person who had no secrets, who could be entirely free? And they'll probably say yes. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. On your first visit, tell him about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If he shows interest, lend him your copy of this book. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. Think it over. Here's what I did. I went through the steps. Here's a book. Read it. Think it over, and I'll get back to you. Not, well, there's a really good meeting. Let me drag you off to the meeting. That's not what the book is telling you to do. You tell them about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It exists. But do you want to start to recover? Do you want to start to recover? We are so quick today. The first thing we do is take somebody to a closed-minded discussion meeting. And sometimes that's not the best thing to do with somebody. Let's see. If he's sincerely interested in all this and wants to see you again, ask him to read the book in the interval. After doing that, he must decide for himself whether he wants to go on. He should not be pushed or prodded by you, his wife, or his friends. If he is to find God, the desire must come from within. So after they've read the book, you can ask him. You want to go through, is this something you want to do? Not, is this something you can do? Is this something you want to do? Because there's a big difference between those two things. Because if you say, we're going to do this right now, the person might say, I can't. I there's no way I'm going to be able to do that. Ask him if he wants to and would be willing to do it. If he could. If he thinks he can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, encourage him to follow his own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. So again, if the person thinks that the house cleaning is drastic and the amends step is drastic, it basically says in here to ask them to follow your own conscience. You know, we're not about browbeating anybody. But point out that we alcoholics have much in common than you would like in any case to be friendly and let it go at that. So you don't want to burn out. You don't want to burn the person out that you're working with like this. You always want to leave on a good note. You don't want to come off evangelical. You don't want to come off demanding. And you need to be able to work with each person as each person needs to be worked with. I think as you gain experience as a sponsor, you're going to intuitively know how to handle certain individuals. Certain individuals need to move at a slower rate than others. I'll tell you what, I'll be honest with you. Some people, I start taking through the steps right away. I'll have them completing their fourth step right after their last bender. Within a day or two after their last bender, they'll be completing a fourth step. Some people I'll move that quickly, like they did in the old days. There's other people, though, that I just intuitively understand they can move a little slower. There's people that it'll be more like somewhere around 6 months or a year when they start working on the fourth step. Now, that's a lot rarer than the people that move through quickly. Probably traditionally, I like to have somebody up to their eighth step list in the first 90 days. That's what I do. And my experience is that the people that do that stay sober at a much higher percentage than the people that don't. The people who have gotten to the amends cards in their first 90 days that I've worked with, are 90% of them stay sober. And the people that don't, there's a much smaller percentage of them. This is not rocket science work. You don't have to get better to do the steps. The steps get you better. The steps are what get you better. You don't get better and then do the steps. They were designed for drunks coming right off the Bowery to do very quickly. It's not complicated. Sometimes we've complicated it with really complicated four-step forms. And, you know, then you start reading the step book, which was never, ever meant to be something that you were supposed to deal with while you're working the steps. And we've complicated it. If you just follow these instructions, I don't know a drunk that can't follow these instructions in their first 90 days. They're simple. Sometimes they're drastic, but they're simple. You know, we put down on paper the people that we were angry at. How can you not know the people you're angry at? Put it down on the paper, you know? I mean, some of this stuff is very, very simple. We ask God at once to remove our fears. Oh, that's a hard one. You know, we better go to 5 or 6 meetings on fear to be able to figure that one out. You know what I mean? This is simple stuff. It's just we've complicated it because alcoholics are complicated people. We like to jam Freudian complexities into a very, very serious first grade spiritual exercise. Okay, it says over here on page 96, about halfway down. This is the second visit now. Now you've given the prospect the book. You've asked them the question whether or not they want to go through with this. Here's the second visit. Suppose now you're making your second visit to a man. He's read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. Again, we're not to be territorial. One of the things that I've learned as a sponsor is not to be territorial. I do not take it personally when people go work with somebody else. Sometimes, a lot of times, I suggest it. If somebody's done a fourth and a fifth step with me and gone through 6, 7, and 8, and I've given them some suggestions on 9 and showed them a little bit about 10 and 11 and how to make that operative in their life, and it's a year later and it's time for them to go through the steps again because they're starting to get a little cranky. Anybody ever get cranky after they've been away from working the steps a year or so? I do. As a matter of fact, I just started a 4-step tonight because I'm cranky. Anyway, I'm starting to believe that my happiness is contingent on your behavior. And that's a sure sign that I need to start writing inventory. Anyway, I suggest to people that I work with to go through the work with somebody else. You know, hey, please keep me as a sponsor, but you've gone through the work with, you've already experienced the work with me already. Experience it with somebody else. You'll get a different viewpoint. You don't want to become dependent on me. I am a human power. I can die. I can get drunk. I can move away. Your dependence needs to be on God. It needs to be on these spiritual exercises. So don't tie yourself in to one person too deeply. So a lot of people, Ron's one of them here, has gone and gotten experience doing the work with other people, you know, doing fifth steps and things like that with other people. And you get it, you get a different perspective, and it's always a new and an enlightening experience. You know, try to find somebody that has what you want. Really has what you want. Their quality of life is really admirable in the areas you want it to be admirable in. And then go do the work with them, provided that they have some understanding of the fundamentals of the recovery program. And start doing that. Start broadening your scope. You know, we're about abundance today. We're not about, we're about opening our lives up in a larger way. Alcoholism made our lives small. It got us to the point where we became almost recluses, you know, drinking for oblivion. You know, we want to do the exact opposite of that. We want our lives to open up and blossom in wonderful ways. And doing this work multiple times with different people is a good way to do it. He may be broke or homeless. Let him move in, lend him money. I'm not gonna go there. Anyway, again, it's my experience that, I mean, ask yourself this question. If you had the ability to increase someone's chances of surviving alcoholism or even staying sober, if you could increase their chances of staying sober, don't you think it would be incumbent upon you to do so? Yes. I don't think there's anybody in AA that wants to see other people drink or other people have miserable lives. Well, one of the things that's necessary is you can only give away something that you've received. The bad thing is you give away what you have, And if you don't have anything, you give away what you don't have. If you don't have an experience with the recovery process in this book, you're going to be sponsoring from that platform. One of the truths in AA is, if you're wondering whether you've had a spiritual awakening, you don't need to wonder any longer. You haven't. It's something that you know in your heart. If you haven't had a spiritual awakening practicing these principles, you're probably going to sponsor from a point of view that that doesn't exist. What I mean by that is this. One of the things that happens in AA meetings all the time is people share opinions rather than experience. Has anyone in here ever been in a ninth step meeting where somebody's raised their hand and said something like this? Well, I haven't really done this step officially yet, but... And then they go on to take the meeting hostage for 5 or 10 minutes, sharing their opinion on what it might be like if they did it. All right? Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12-step program is about experience. It's not about opinion. And until you go through the recovery process, you're going to have a lot of opinions on the recovery process. You're not going to have experience on it. So here you are, you're sponsoring people with a bunch of opinions. Some of those opinions may be good, and some of them may work. Some of them you may have picked up at meetings. But if they're not truly operative in your own experience, the alcoholic's going to see through that crap. They just are. They're just going to know after a period of time. They're going to know that you're not talking from experience. You're bullshitting them, is what it is. And so, again, ask yourself this question. If you're choosing to sponsor people, don't you think that you owe them the best possible chance for their survival? So you need to have gone through this work if you're going to be sponsoring somebody and offering them the best possible chance for survival. Now, this goes against, and part of the opening statement here is, you know, we don't want to indict anyone's program. We don't want to indict anybody's sponsor for not having followed this. The literature-based recovery process is relatively new in this area. There's pockets of enthusiasm here and there where they talk about this stuff. And then there's the rest of the area where they really don't. And it's not a lot of people's experience. It's a minority of people's experience. However, that doesn't make it any less important or any less vital. So it's very, very hard for me to present this material and not sound very critical of other meetings or other sponsorship techniques. It's almost impossible. I think it's more important for me to share what I truly believe and what I've truly experienced up here than it is to worry about casting a little bit of doubt on some of the meetings or some of the sponsorship techniques around here. It's my experience. I almost didn't make it because of certain meetings and certain sponsorship techniques. So it really means something to me to talk about this stuff. Please don't, once you've gone through this work and you've gotten a spiritual awakening, please don't attack the old timers with it or try to share responsibly in meetings and try to keep it to your own experience. I'd say probably 50% of the people that I take through the work, and listen, I've gone through this stage myself and sometimes delve back into it before I catch myself, but about 50% of the people that I've taken through this work get very critical in other meetings in the area. You know, come in and really start coming down on the people who've been just fine for many, many years with the oral tradition variety. You know what I'm saying? And I don't think we should be about a schism. I don't think we should be about any type of separation. I think we should be about unity. Unity is where it's at as far as the traditions are concerned. And I think it's much more unifying to share experientially and to share with responsibility and with compassion than it is to instigate spiritual warfare with the oral tradition aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous in North Jersey. So please be responsible. You're going to save more lives by not alienating than you are by alienating. So, and I've learned that by experience. I've alienated a lot of people that I'm still alienated from, you know, and I do regret that. Anyway, I don't know how much further I can go on this topic. We're at the hour. For the next 15 minutes, we're going to open this up to sharing, and I'm going to turn the meeting back over to Taryn so that she can lead that part of it. Thanks.